It's an election year, friends. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. This will be a commentary episode because I'm here alone. Pastor Dusty White, Pastor Chris Hemmelman, my two conversation partners are both on vacation. And so I am Pastor Bob Thune of Quorumdale Church in Omaha, Nebraska, and sitting down as we do on Wednesdays to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today I want to talk about the fact that populism is here to stay. One of the major news items over the past few weeks has been, first of all, the attempted assassination of presidential candidate Donald Trump, and then the Republican National Convention, which followed right on the heels of that a few days later, in which J.D. Vance was selected as Trump's running mate. And so we are now into sort of the final few months of election 2024, and what we're going to be hearing about for most of the next few months has to do with election-related news. Now, maybe you love that, maybe you hate that. I'm kind of a person who I pay a lot of attention to politics. I just like reading about it and thinking about it. You might be one of those people who's like, man, I can't take another political noise in my life. So wherever you find yourself, I want to try to help you just sort of understand, I think, one of the moment that we're in American politics, because I think it is a sort of key shift culturally and societally. So I want to name what I'm seeing, and I'll leave it to you and your feedback on whether I'm right, whether I'm wrong, whether you're seeing what I'm seeing, or whether you see something different. But I think it's very interesting what's happening in our national politics in the last couple of months. So let me begin by let me begin at a real 30,000 foot level. First of all, I am a registered independent. Okay, I'm neither a Republican nor a Democrat. However, I would call myself a political and social conservative. And I think of myself as an old school conservative, meaning I just mean by that I want to conserve the social and familial traditions that lead to stability and sort of steadiness in society. I was listening recently to an interview that Al Mohler did, and he defined conservatism this way: a commitment to the preservation and conservation of the structures necessary for human flourishing and order. I think that's a great definition, and that's how I would position myself. I'm a person who wants to preserve and conserve the structures necessary for human flourishing and order. Things like the family, local units like churches and community groups and neighborhood associations, little local forms of human connectedness, as well as structures like law enforcement, political institutions, education, the things that make for steady, ordered human flourishing in society. And so being a conservative means I want to see those things preserved and conserved over time so that we can pass them on to the next generation. I tend to care a lot about that. Now, you may call yourself more conservative. You may call yourself more progressive. I don't know where you find yourself on the political spectrum, but I do know that we, all of us who are listening to this podcast in America, live in a two-party system that for years has been very predictable, Republicans being more the sort of right-leaning, more conservative party, Democrats being the more left-leaning, more progressive party. And over the past season of time, there's been a lot of interesting shifts in sort of how those parties have aligned themselves and in the interesting sort of fractures that's created in our broader society. So with that as sort of a big picture background, you're listening to a registered independent who is self-consciously a conservative person. Here's what I want to observe about what's happened in the Republican Party in the past few weeks. So as you know, Donald Trump chose J.D. Vance, a senator from Ohio, as his vice presidential running mate. And what that means is that populism is here to stay. Let me explain what I mean. We've been talking about politics every once in a while in this podcast since 2016, maybe since 2014. But the first Trump election in 2016, we did some episodes on this in 2020, here in 2024. We have talked consistently and tried to sort of help Christians have wisdom in sort of what moment are we living in politically? And obviously with the election of Donald Trump the first time around in 2016, with his defeat in 2020, and with him being on the ballot again in 2024, a lot of things have been shifting in sort of the American political landscape. We still have a lot of time ahead of us before the November election, and I imagine things will continue to shift and change. But what is interesting is everybody would agree that what Trump tapped into in 2016 was a sort of rampant strain of populism. When you think of populism, think of appeal to the popular masses, the average ordinary person, as opposed to appeal to sort of the intellectual or cultural elites. What Trump did in 2016, you heard a lot of talk about the white working class showing up to vote for Trump. You heard a lot about his appeal to the ordinary citizen. That's populism, and that is a key strain in American politics going all the way back to Andrew Jackson in the 1830s. There's always been in American politics this sort of a populist strain or a populist stream. Trump tapped into that in 2016, and with his pick of J.D. Vance to be his vice president, I think that populism is here to stay, and I think this signals a shift for what the Republican Party will be in America for the decade to come and maybe beyond. I want to read to you from an article by Damon Linker. Damon Linker is a lecturer in political science at the University of Pennsylvania. So this is an Ivy League lecturer on politics. And he, I follow him on Twitter because he tends to be a very wise reader of what's going on in the political world. He's pretty moderate himself. And I think he wrote the most helpful piece in naming what is happening in American politics with the naming of J.D. Vance as vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party. I'm going to just read from this article called The Convert. The sort of subtext or teaser for the article says this: J.D. Vance is forging an ideology of right populism that will have major consequences for the future of the GOP, the Democrats, and the United States. This article is from July 17th, 2024. It's on Damon Linker's Substack, and I think it nails what's happening in politics within the Republican Party. I'm simply going to read from Damon Linker's observations here and then offer some commentary on them. It can be a comfort and consolation to believe one's political opponents don't really mean what they say. They're liars, hypocrites, shameless opportunists who will say and do anything to gain power. It's impossible to take them seriously. So it's been with the reaction of Democrats to news that the Republican nominee Donald Trump has chosen Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate. Because Vance was once a ferocious Trump critic and changed his views around the time he launched his Senate campaign in 2021, it's easy to conclude that everything he's said and done since then has been a cynical ruse. He's just saying what he thinks he must in order to get ahead in a Trumpified GOP. I think that's wrong, and Democrats affirm it at their peril. Of course, opportunism, self-interest, is always a big factor in politics. Politicians want to win approval and elections, and through them, power and public honors. But politics can also be about ideas and ideology, the ends for which power is wielded. I don't doubt that Vance made a self-interested calculation as he was contemplating a Senate run in Ohio, but he didn't follow the path of so many Republicans who have reluctantly bent the knee to Trump after a half-hearted attempt to resist him. He didn't put his head down and slink away into the shadows while secretly hoping Trump will disappear. Rather, Vance set about building something, an ideological palace in which he could find a new home on the far side of the Rubicon his opportunism prompted him to cross. The Vance that emerged after 2021 is an aspirational right populist who blends together staunch and unapologetic social conservatism, support for the kinds of economic regulations more often associated with progressives like Elizabeth Warren, and a desire for retrenchment in foreign policy, including the withdrawal of support for Ukraine and its conflict with Russia. All right, so far, Damon Linker is arguing that J.D. Vance is an aspirational right populist who is blending together social conservatism, economic regulation, you might expect more from someone like Elizabeth Warren, and a sort of America first foreign policy, retrenchment or backing away from sort of broad involvement in foreign affairs and sort of a focus on America. Now, I want to read to you, as this article goes on, I think it will start to resonate with what many of you felt in 2016. He writes, "The road to revolution. Donald Trump is a man of instincts and impulses, not ideas. He had a hunch back in 2015 that the Republican Party was hollow and weak, an easy target for an insurgency. He'd appealed directly to the masses on a short list of issues, immigration, trade, foreign policy. And he'd combined that with a somewhat softer line on entitlement cuts and promises of a more ferocious prosecution of the culture war. That would be the mix. Why? Because he intuited that it would work. And when wedded to Trump's own fame, charisma, and pugilistic persona, it did work. Much more than even Trump himself expected it to. But Trump didn't know the first thing about governing. And there was next to no one in Republican circles interested in transforming Trump's ad hoc mix of promises and positions into a policy agenda, let alone anyone who knew how to use the levers of power in Washington to get them enacted. Which is why the Trump administration was so hapless, with its main policy accomplishments, things any old Republican would have attempted to do." I think that's a great description. Basically, Trump captured this amazing popular groundswell and roared into power in 2016, but then he didn't know how to govern. And the people around him, the Republicans who were, you know, leading all the agencies and in key places in federal government, didn't really want to help him figure out how to sort of build whatever it was he thought he wanted to build. And so his first administration didn't really do anything super notable on the policy side of things. It was a pretty straightforward Republican administration that any Republican who was elected president kind of would have done, right? It was standard Republican fare. Damon Linker continues, "The intellectuals noticed. Despite building comfortable careers in the ideological universe of Reaganite conservatism, many of them responded to Trump's uncanny electoral success by setting out to forge a new right populist ideology and policy agenda from scratch. There was the new quarterly journal American Affairs, the new think tank American Compass, a revamped post-liberal First Things magazine, and a series of conferences devoted to national conservatism, and a more rabidly anti-liberal Claremont Institute, all of them trying to develop a constellation of ideas for after Trump. They were joined by a small number of elected officials, mostly in the Senate, Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, and a handful of others, who began doing their own work of ideological and policy construction." What Linker is describing there is what has been going on sort of behind the scenes over the past 8 years or so. There have been a number of sort of initiatives and leaders trying to figure out, okay, how do we construct policy and proposals for sort of a Trump version of a populist vision of right-leaning politics? Let me, at the risk of being a little bit nerdy, let me describe to you how that's a little different from the classic, what that article, what Damon Linker called Reaganite conservatism. So in the conservative wing of the Republican Party, or sort of the, you know, the in the Republican establishment for the past, I don't know, 50 or 60 years, it's been animated by what many people have called fusionism. I think that's a term that comes from William F. Buckley, who launched National Review magazine back in 1955. And think of fusionism like a three-legged stool. Okay, the first leg is a free market economy. The second leg is a strong military. And the third leg is a faith, family, and flag social conservatism. I'm borrowing that from R.R. Reno in an article he wrote on fusionism a few years ago. So, free market economy, strong military, faith, family, and flag. Those were sort of the three aspects of Republican fusionism. If you think about post-World War II America, obviously to win World War II, you had a lot of central planning in America. You had the government controlling a lot of the manufacturing, a lot of the production. You had obviously rationing during World War II. You had drives for scrap metal and scrap rubber. All the sort of industrial might of America sort of got pushed toward winning World War II. And so the government had gotten heavily involved in business and in industry and in the economy during World War II. And on the backside of World War II, the conservative thinkers wanted to see that go away. They wanted to see government shrink and get out of a sort of centrally planned economy because they saw communism sort of moving in the direction of centrally planned economies in places like Russia. And so conservatives advocated for a free market economy without a ton of government intervention. They advocated for a strong military because, of course, the Cold War was in full swing and we needed to have a strong military in order to deter nuclear aggression by Russia. And then faith, family, and flag, social conservatism. That's the classic sort of three-legged stool of what's called fusionism, which is sort of the Ronald Reagan vision of the Republican Party. Now, you heard Damon Linker say in his piece that the difference now, the difference of sort of the Trump, Josh Hawley, Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance vision of sort of a post-liberal conservatism, here's how it's different. Number one, though they still believe in an appropriately strong military, they're very opposed to sort of international interventionism. So if you think about the Cold War, America was trying to sort of, you know, push back communism wherever we could. And so we were involved through the, you know, the Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba, and we have CIA operatives in Eastern Europe. And, you know, America is sort of leveraging its influence internationally to try to keep communism at bay. If you ask, what does that look like now that the Cold War is over? You have a lot of these leaders who are saying, hey, we shouldn't be involved in places like Ukraine. It's not our problem. It's not a place where American military energy and spending should be oriented. We should be caring about our own, especially like, for instance, our southern border. That matters more for the people of America than, you know, Ukraine and Russia's conflict in Europe. You can agree or disagree with that. But I think the case being made by sort of the new populist right is, you know, we should care about our own concerns and needs and citizens first. And so whereas classic Reagan conservatism would have been very involved in international affairs, J.D. Vance and others are arguing that we pull back from some of those international commitments and that though we want to retain an appropriately strong military, we don't want to be the policeman to the world. Second, instead of a free market economy, you see a lot more proposals to tinker with what I guess a true free market conservative would say. They want to tinker with economic production. So J.D. Vance in particular, because he's a senator from Ohio and because his concern has been especially sort of the hollowed out American heartland where there used to be a lot of factories and a lot of industrial production, and now there's a lot of depression and a lot of economic malaise because of how we've shipped all of that to places like China and Vietnam. Vance and Trump are advocates of things like tariffs on certain foreign imported goods, things like incentives that would encourage American manufacturing and production. And that's sort of a return to some what you might call central planning kind of impulses. They want the government to take a heavier hand in what the American economy should look like and how it should be incentivized to produce in America. So you think about Joe Biden, for instance, passing the CHIPS Act a couple years ago and trying to bring a bunch of semiconductor manufacturing back into the American continent. That's the kind of thing that people like Trump and J.D. Vance would celebrate and say, yeah, we should be doing things like that. The government should be putting its thumb on the scale to incentivize the American economy in certain ways that benefit wage workers, blue-collar workers. J.D. Vance, I think, wants to see the minimum wage increase to $20 an hour, which a lot of free market conservatives are very opposed to. But these are the kinds of things that sort of the new populist right really values. So as opposed to interventionism, more of a America first foreign policy, as opposed to a free market economy, more of a central involvement by the government in the economy. But then that third leg of the stool, faith, family, and freedom, obviously, yes, they're all in on that. So this new populism, this new sort of right populism that is represented by Trump and J.D. Vance is here to stay. When Trump won election in 2016, the question was, is he going to be able to accomplish any of this in policy? And I think as Linker notes in this article, you would say, well, not really. I mean, his administration was sort of a straightforward Republican presidency. What has happened since 2020 is that, A, the groundswell among the population of America for those kinds of things has not gone away. They continue to love figures like Donald Trump. And there's been a bunch of intellectual work done by some of those institutions that Linker named, places like the Claremont Institute, American Affairs Journal, senators like Josh Hawley and Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance, to build out some policy initiatives around that new vision of sort of a populist right. And so now that we are in 2024, the vision of what the Republican Party is going to look like for the future is clearly trending in the direction of that new populism. And that's why I'm titling the podcast today, Populism is Here to Stay. In a minute, I'll say more about how Christians should respond to this, I think. But first, I want to read you the concluding paragraphs from Damon Linker's essay. Trump, he writes, is the present-day avatar of and vehicle for this nascent right populist ideology and agenda. But he won't be around forever. Until the announcement of his choice of Vance, it made sense to assume Trump's eventual passing from the scene might issue in at least a partial reversal of the slowly building changes in the GOP over the past 8 years. The Reaganite libertarian center-right would attempt to reassert control and turn back the clock to the years when Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan were the choice of Republican voters. With Vance now elevated to Trump's anointed successor, such a reversal has become all but inconceivable. Trumpism now has an ideological heir, leaving the Reaganism that's been shunted to the side for the past 8 years well and truly dead. Does Vance really believe it, or is he just an opportunist? It's probably a mix of both. But in the end, the precise proportions don't matter. What counts is that he's converted to a new faith and is eager to share the good news. So you see the title of the piece there, The Convert. He's sort of, the analogy he's using is that J.D. Vance is a convert to this new Trumpist, populist, sort of right populism, and that he's eager to proclaim this good news. Now, what I like about Damon Linker is he's reading J.D. Vance not cynically, but charitably. He's saying, hey, I think this guy actually had sort of a conversion, a change of heart, that these Trumpist policies actually have credibility. And he became sort of an advocate for that. Obviously, earlier in his career, J.D. Vance was a strong critic of Donald Trump. And Damon Linker says the Democrats who are reading him just as sort of a cynical opportunist are misreading J.D. Vance. He links also in this piece to an interview with Ross Douthat in the New York Times, where he writes about J.D. Vance, and that's behind a paywall, so I probably won't put that link up because most of you won't be able to get to it anyway unless you have a New York Times subscription. But I think this is an interesting reading of J.D. Vance. I think at the very least, Damon Linker is correct that populism is here to stay. And that what we're going to see in the Republican Party over the next 10 to 20 years is going to be that new version of the three-legged stool, which is going to be faith, family, and flag conservatism socially. It's going to be sort of an America First vision of foreign policy, and it's going to be a little more intervention economically rather than a pure free market economic principle. So it'll be interesting to see how this shapes up, but I think you should expect that this is a decisive shift. In other words, until this point, again, I told you at the beginning of this podcast, I'm a conservative. And until this point, I had the same instinct that Damon Linker says there in the end, where he says, I kind of assumed that, you know, once Trump kind of runs his course, the Republican Party is going to shift back to more the Mitt Romney types, more the sort of neoconservative, Reagan kind of vision. I think that's less likely now. I do think that J.D. Vance being vice president at age 39 will mean that this vision of populism is what starts to get instantiated in the Republican Party moving forward. And so I think that does mean something for where our national dialogue will be headed, for probably how the Democratic Party will reposition itself in response to that, and for maybe opportunities for other affiliations and associations. I believe it'd be nice to get out of just a two-party vision in America. It'd be nice to have a viable third party. And I don't know if this will mean that happens or if actually the new Republican vision will create a broader coalition that will be able to gather more people around that banner. Trump has been a very divisive figure, and it's possible that J.D. Vance, 4 years from now, perhaps, might be a more popular figure, one that rallies more people around him and is, who is a little less polarizing with some of his rhetoric and personality. That remains to be seen, but I think it is certainly true that we're seeing a shift in terms of what the political parties are going to look like in the years ahead of us. And I think that's very, very important. And the reason I'm doing a podcast on that is because I think it's important for Christians to see that, and because I think it's brand new. I think it's just coming to fruition now in the past month or two. And so it is going to be something we look back on 2024 and point to. Okay, so in the introduction to this podcast, we say that we talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. So, how does the gospel of Jesus Christ connect to the question and issue of how should I vote? How should I relate to this new populism that is emergent on the right of the American political spectrum? How should I respond and relate to the changes in our national politics? And I want to answer that very, very simply. There's much more that could be said, but I want to say the simplest thing possible that I think is a starting point for our engagement in politics in the years to come. What I want to say is simply this. We ought to be Christians first, Americans second, Republicans, Democrats, or Independents third, and then subcategories of that fourth. So here's what I mean. What will help the church as we go forward into this new world of whatever political future we're walking into, what will help us is to realize first and foremost, our first identity, our primary identity is as Christians. And Christians are always homeless in this world. There may be political parties or political leaders or political principles that more or less align with a biblical vision, but at the end of the day, we are citizens of the kingdom of heaven and we are always Christians first, and we should never imagine that any political party or political platform on earth is going to fully align with the kingdom of God. And the minute we start conflating those two, we are in trouble. We should always be Christians first. We should always be Americans second. And I think there was a little glimmer of this in what you saw right after, in the days immediately following the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. I heard even the most left-leaning liberal commentators on cable television saying things like, hey, this is a scary moment for America. That could have been a traumatic event for Americans. It's good. We are thankful that Donald Trump was not killed. Now, these are people who in every other way very much dislike Donald Trump, but I think you saw a return to that, the solidarity we share as we're all Americans. So Christians first, Americans second, at least those of you who are listening to this podcast within the United States of America. Third, we're Republicans or Democrats or Independents. We might align with a particular party or whatever. And then fourth, maybe you're a Reagan Republican, or maybe you're a J.D. Vance new populist Republican, or maybe you're a Joe Biden Democrat, or maybe you're a Bernie Sanders Democrat, whatever. There are subcategories within that that you might align around. The reason I think it's important for us to keep those in order is because what the society around us is always pushing is that we start at the bottom of that hierarchy and then work our way up. So your neighbors or your friends or your family members or the people that are sort of commenting on your social media feed want to know, Are you for or against Donald Trump or J.D. Vance? Are you for or against Joe Biden? Do you align more with sort of the Reagan vision of conservatism and or the sort of Trump version? Do you align more with sort of the Bernie Sanders wing or the Joe Biden classical Democrat wing? Are you more of a libertarian? Like, they want to make us start at the bottom of that hierarchy because that's how all the social media algorithms work. And that's how those who don't have their identity in Christ tend to place themselves in the world. We tend to want to identify ourselves by a tribe small enough and defined enough that it can give us a sense of identity. As Christians, the gospel sets us free from that. So we are free to be, first of all, Christians, Americans, second, Republicans, Democrats, or independents, third, and then whatever lies beyond that, fourth. And so the way that works for me, as I've already told you, hey, look, I'm an independent. That's the third thing about me. And I'm a traditional conservative. That's sort of the fourth thing about me. But the first thing that matters is I'm a Christian. And the second thing that matters is I'm an American. And I remain an American, whether Donald Trump or Joe Biden is president. I continue to live in and fight for the good of America, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat administration. It does not matter who wins or loses an election. It doesn't change the fact that I am caring about the good of America. Now, my caring about the good of America might lead me to oppose certain policies and seek to promote others. My caring about the good of America might lead me to crusade for certain initiatives and to oppose other ones. But what's important is that I get my identity oriented in the right order. Christian first, American second, Republican, Democrat, or independent third, and then everything else fourth underneath that. As we walk through an election year, and as we participate in community with people who will disagree with us on all kinds of things, and as we have conversations about, hey, what's best for the country and what's not so good, let's keep our identities grounded in Christ, and let's keep our priorities and how we think of ourselves in the right order. I think that will help us very much going forward. As I have said, populism is here to stay. And in the show notes to this podcast, I will link this Damon Linker Substack piece. Now, Substack, this is a free, non-paywalled version, but I don't know if Substack always stays that way or if it's only that way for a week or two and then it will go back behind a paywall. So I guess you'll find out when you click the link that's in this podcast description. Friends, the goal of this podcast is to equip our own churches for discipleship and mission. So we always say, hey, look, you might be a Christian or a church leader who's listening in from somewhere else, even somewhere else in the world. And thanks for listening in, if that's you. We pray that what we've talked about here might be helpful in some way to you as you minister in your context. And we do always love to hear from listeners. And so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. Next week is a fifth Wednesday, so we will have an archive episode for that week, and then we'll be back the week after that with a fresh episode of the Wednesday conversation. See you.